And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom, and you are listening to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com. Ari Abramowitz here with Jeremy Gimpel on our second consecutive week on our podcast. Jeremy, it's good to see you.
2 weeks.
2 weeks now, that's right. Every time I see you, by the way, I gotta say, I was just telling you, it's weird to have like a best friend of 20 years, we know each other well, and all of a sudden, you like step up in such a significant way, and you've really transformed yourself to being worth something. I'm kidding, of course. But no, you really stepped up to the plate. I look at you like clean cut, ready to go, and I'm like feeling really in the dumps right now. Like right now as we speak, I'm in the dumps. And it's weird because I'm so grateful with the way things went with that crazy, embarrassing accident that I had. If anyone is interested in knowing the details of that, I'm not going to reiterate them here, but you can send me a message and I will send you a link to the past fellowship that we did that I really got into it. And I have to say that after doing that fellowship, people really responded in droves to me and told me how inspiring it was, that I was open and honest and vulnerable. Which is true. I guess it was an embarrassing thing, but you would be surprised, Jeremy, how many people have done that very thing that I did.
You have inspired the nations by forgetting to put the car in park.
Yes, that is the essence of what happened. I think I painted a little bit more of a noble and heroic picture of myself than simply forgetting to put into park. Your mother said that she has a good friend that did the same thing, and the car also ran over him. So I'm not the only person in history that's been run over by their own car when they are the driver currently, which seems like a great feat. But she said that her friend is like still suffering tremendously. Right. And crazily enough, the part of me that was run over by the car did nothing. Like that didn't hurt me. I saw it run over myself and I saw it not hurt at all, and nothing happened from that. But what did happen was when my shoulder ripped out of the socket. That was the traumatizing part, and I'm still sort of suffering from that. And just a little bit like out of my whole body, I'm just not feeling good. So I said that to you. We sat down and I was like, physiologically, I'm not feeling good, and that's causing me emotionally not to feel good. And you were like, there's three pillars, of course. It's like seven pillars or six rules. But I was like, save it for the show. So what are your three pillars?
Well, it's clear. Rav Kook talks about the fact that tshuva begins with the body. And now they found scientifically that that's just the case. You have to first get your body in order, and then your emotions and your feelings and your state of mind follow that. So if you are not sleeping well, you're not eating well, and you're not exercising, those three things are three pillars that will align your emotions and your state of mind and your mood. Those are three pillars.
I mean, it's funny that you say that because you just told me a story right now about our very, very close mutual friend, I won't say names, that you saw walking through the farm this morning, and he had a very dark, gloomy, angry countenance upon him. And he's one of these guys that's just transparent as anything. You could look at his face and know exactly what's going on
right
in his heart and in his mind. And so tell that story.
Well, I saw my friend, and he just had kind of a dark cloud hanging over him, just looked angry and disgruntled and upset, and I threw him in my freezer. That's what I've come to do now. I'm like John the Baptist. I'm just putting everyone into freezing water.
Right. So you bought one of those. I don't know if they have them in America. I don't remember, but every makolet, every little store, convenience store in Israel has it. It's one of those freezers.
Of course they have it in America. It's like a horizontal freezer.
It's a horizontal freezer that you slide the top open. You want this chocolate, this sort of popsicle. It's the popsicle freezer.
Popsicle freezer.
So you lined it with PVC and you filled it with water, and every morning it goes on 6 hours beforehand until it's freezing ice cold, and then you jump into that.
You have to chip away the ice a little bit around the side usually, and then push it to the side, and then you go into water.
Anything that people can do that don't happen to have, for some crazy reason, they don't happen to have a human-sized ice cream freezer in their home?
Yeah, well, the truth is, I mean, it's quite big because a human body goes into it, but it wasn't that expensive. It was worth every dollar that I spent on it. It's about $300.
And if you That was $300. Stop it.
Yeah, it was 1,000 shekels. That was
Stop.
It.
Stop.
That's it. It's worth every shekel.
I wish
shekel.
I had room for something like that.
Well, see, I go into it every morning.
You know what? I'm
going
to buy one and put it right here next to yours.
So I go into it every morning. Cold showers do a lot. They do a lot. I mean, they're not as potent as full immersion into ice cold water, but cold showers do a lot. But that's also,
Okay, so he jumped in and then?
And he walked out like he was a new man. He was just glowing.
By his own admission.
By his own admission, and also like it was undeniable just in the radiance in his countenance. It was like, it's almost like, so for me, it sort of expresses itself when he wakes up in the morning. He's sort of disgruntled and angry and frustrated. So a lot of times I wake up in the morning and I just feel sort of like down, maybe a little bit nervous, just like a kind of like foggy minded, not doing well.
Yeah, that is a perfect description of where I'm at right now.
And so I force myself to go and move my body for about 20, 30 minutes. And I go either running or I go on an elliptical and I get my blood flowing. And that just changes your state of mind because now you're moving. Now your blood is flowing. Your endorphins are being sent out to your brain is doing something. And I ended by going into freezing cold water. And by the time you come out of that water, you're an entirely different person. And every morning, I don't want to do any of that. Who wants to go and...
Every morning, it's a struggle or it's not a struggle anymore. You just don't want to.
Well, every morning, it's a struggle because I would rather not do anything. I'd rather just sit around and bum around. Everyone, like our body just wants to chill and relax. So sometimes it's more of a struggle than others, but every day it's a struggle. Who wants to go and breathe heavily and stress your body and run and strain? Like no one wants to do that. And definitely no one wants to get into cold water and step into a cold shower. But because I've been doing this now for so long and so consistently, I just know that as soon as I finish that little morning routine and I come out of the cold water, I feel so much better. It's just worth it. It changes the rest of my day. So just the physiology is really important. If you don't get a good night's sleep because your shoulder's hurting you, it's hard to really function optimally in the next day. Or if you're eating really bad food and you're sort of like indigestion.
Yeah, I'm like waking up throughout the night in pain if I turn over on it wrong.
It's really hard. If you don't have those three things, it's really hard. Actually, I was just listening to some scientist. I forgot their name. But they were saying that the science now is that if you don't exercise in the morning and actually like get your body flowing until you're sweating, if you don't do that, it's not only that the exercise is a positive, it's as if your body sort of transitions into taking a depressant. Like imagine you can take an antidepressant that makes you sort of happy as a pill. If you don't exercise, your body acts as if you've taken
a depressant. It's interesting. It's like the sages tell us, the modern sages, that life is like an escalator.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like you can just decide not to go up.
Right. It's up or down. There is no neutral.
Right. If you just stay in place, you're going down.
Right. So that's now been physiologically proven that if you don't actually proactively go out and run, it's as if your body takes a depressant and it makes you feel even more closed and bad. And I mean, the truth is you're saying that was really nice, by the way, that you were saying that. And I have to give all of the credit to the fellowship. I think that's just the bottom line. I mean, when people say like, so what is the fellowship about? What are you guys talking about? And I don't always know exactly what to say because I work on it all week. And then whatever comes out of like a week of research and reading and Torah study and thoughts and things, then that's what I'm going to say. But it takes a week to figure it out. I don't know if there's an overarching, what is the fellowship about? But it for sure is about becoming a better and better person, closer to God, closer to who we could be in the world, just becoming better and better and more good and more loving and just becoming a better person. So because I've been reading about that and studying about that and writing about that and teaching about that, well, it's just changed me as a person.
It's interesting when I look at you and I and our message, they've always complemented each other in some sort of way. It's never the exact same thing. When we did Tuesday Night Live in Jerusalem, it was always much more natural for me to talk to the people in the theater. Right, we had 500-600 people in the theater. And to me, that was so overwhelming that like I was just talking to them. Whereas you were talking to all the viewers around the world and you were talking to the cameras. You remember that?
Right.
By the way, I've been looking for the episode of where we interviewed Naftali Bennett. Because, of course, everybody on Facebook, which thank goodness I've now stripped from all of my devices and I need to go to like the computer and connect it to the internet to see it. So I'm disconnected really from internet, which has been a blessing for me in a huge way. But everyone's posting these pictures of themselves. Whoever's got a picture with them and Bennett is posting it because he's prime minister now. I am not eager to do so. I don't feel like that's like, I want to be like, I was with Naftali Bennett. I never felt called to do that sort of selfie picture thing with people.
So why are you looking for the Tuesday Night Live?
Because I wanted to hear what he had to say. I wanted to
because that
hear.
Was before he actually stepped into the political system, where he was still like bright-eyed and ideological.
Even though it is a little bit, because there was one thing I remember that he said that really sort of redeems him a little bit, And that's when we were talking, we had, if I remember correctly, it was Zvulun Orlev, Moshe Feiglin, Naftali Bennett.
Ketzaleh. It was instead of...
Right, but it was Ketzaleh. So I don't... He wasn't on that episode. Which episode was he on?
Who wasn't on?
Bennett wasn't on that episode.
He was on that episode.
He was?
It was Moshe Feiglin, Ketzaleh, and Naftali Bennett. And Daniel Hershkowitz.
Four. Looked like three. Anyways, so I remember they were talking about Judea and Samaria. I'll show you the episode.
I don't know, maybe Ketzaleh wasn't there. I don't remember.
By the way, just to let you know, I typed in Tuesday Night Live, Naftali Bennett, and the first 15 of them were Saturday Night Live, right? And then I typed in Tuesday Night Live in Jerusalem, Naftali Bennett. YouTube has an algorithm where you see what they want you to see.
I'm sure.
It's crazy that Tuesday Night Live in Jerusalem didn't get us up there. That's nuts. Okay. And it's not like it's our website. It's their own platform.
Right.
Anyways, this whole social media thing is very unsettling. What's going on?
What needs to happen, in my opinion, is there needs to be, like how Bitcoin is a decentralized currency, and that's taken the power away from governments just being able to print up unlimited amounts of their own currency and sort of impoverish their own people or the other countries that are related to that currency. So it's a decentralized thing. It can't be corrupted. It's just math and science, and that's the value of Bitcoin. So there needs to be a decentralized social media platform. There needs to be a decentralized YouTube, a decentralized Facebook, where there's no censorship, where that's just like, let the world be, and the truth will ultimately...
Right. Well, I just don't know if that, you know, the powers that be, these massive oligarchs that have all of this control, what is their incentive to surrender it? I mean, I remember when they took, whatchamacallit, that Facebook...
Parler
off the internet. They actually took it off the internet.
Right.
I remember it was crazy. It wasn't just that they took it off the Apple platform and this. They actually took them off the internet. I didn't know that anyone really owned the internet. Now I do know that they own the internet. But anyways, Bennett was on the show. Could I have a good for you, Ari, that you remembered where you were going with that?
Yeah.
Bennett was on the show and we were talking about Judea and Samaria and what the plan is and how to do it and what to annex, or we don't like the word annex, but declare sovereignty over. You don't annex something that's already yours. And so because of this ridiculous Oslo Accords, there was an absolute humiliation and embarrassment for the Jewish people and caused tremendous damage, unbelievable bloodshed and terror, which we're still suffering from. They divided the areas of Judea and Samaria, as they call the West Bank, into areas A, B, and C. A is what they call exclusively Palestinian Authority. A Jew is not allowed to drive in there. If he is, pretty much he can be lynched and murdered. B is like the connective tissue between A and C, pretty much, where there's like shared authority over it, and C is Jewish land, Jewish controlled. And so Bennett said we should annex area C. You remember that?
Yeah.
And the discussion was, my initial response, because I guess I'm like a purist, which is easy to do when you're not actually controlling the levers of power, was why would we just do that? It would de facto make it where areas A and B are not ours. And he was like, no, it should be a phased thing in the first phase, Area C, and then we've already established that, and let's move on. I feel like you've always been a little bit more, correct me if I'm wrong, in the Bennett camp of pragmatism. It's in your blood. Your father was...
To be more pragmatic.
Yeah,
you're more... I'm definitely more pragmatic than you, but that's not saying much.
Yeah, I feel bad for you, though. Like, you're such an idealist, and you're still in the pragmatic camp, because it's all... Who you're in the boat with. Right. But even your father, you know, on his wall in his office, he's got that big picture of Begin shaking the hand of Sadat with Jimmy Carter there in the middle. It's like an oil paint. And it's not just a picture he has up. Your father, like, loves Begin. And Begin gave up the Sinai, and he was a pragmatist. So I feel like this pragmatism is a little bit in your blood, which isn't a bad thing, but it's interesting because you seem more angry at Bennett than I do.
Well, I think what happened with Naftali Bennett is that it awakened within me my own corruption and the corruption of our system, meaning Naftali Bennett's political party represents religious Zionism, whether we like it or not. He is a religious Zionist with a kippah on his head. So is Matan Kahana. So is Idit Silman. So is most of the people in their party. They have these kippahs through God, knitted kippahs on their heads.
Well, then what does Smotrich represent if they represent religious Zionism?
Another brand of religious Zionism. There's like kind of two streams within religious Zionism. There was always two parties for that reason. One was the Mafdal, which is more like the Bnei Akiva modern Orthodox, and then the more there's like a
right, Bennett's more the modern Orthodox. Modern like his Orthodox. Kippa says a lot about him. Right. I don't like judging people by their exterior garments, but garments do convey something about who you are and what you're about.
He's putting it on for a reason. He's conveying that that's what he wants to be.
Yes, but is he? Because a lot of people are like, wow, for the first time we have a religious prime minister. I'm like, why? Why? What makes him religious? What makes him religious? Right. That he's wearing a very small piece of cloth on the back of his head? That's what makes him religious? I feel like religious is a very sort of deep spiritual truth, and I don't know that Benjamin Netanyahu wasn't religious. Right. Maybe he wasn't observant, but I don't know what Bennett does in his house.
Either way,
so because he doesn't flick a light on Shabbat and Bibi does, that makes him religious and him not? I don't know.
Right, and I don't even know if that light thing on Shabbat is relevant or not. I don't know what Naftali Bennett does behind closed doors. It's impossible to know. But I think either way, he represents a part of the religious Zionist camp and a big part. I think even now, they ran, you know, polls saying, would you vote for Naftali Bennett today? And he still has about three or four mandates. Which
does
is,
he really?
Yeah, four mandates. I think that's what it said. Four.
That's
four
so seats. Interesting.
Yeah, there's like a big
part. So I guess he made a calculation there.
Yeah, and so he said.
Because even, you know, even in me, where I was infuriated by the betrayal of what he did, when I see him sitting in the prime minister seat, it's hard not to feel like a little bit like,
He did it.
He did it. Yeah. This may be a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
it's hard to know.
Well, just the way it was done was so, it lacked nobility. It lacked character. It lacked honesty. It lacked like all of the virtues. And, you know, he was in an elite commando unit in the army and his other, Matan Kahana's other kind of, you know, I don't know, henchman, but another parliamentarian in his party was also in an elite unit in a fighter pilot. And the Haredim were like giving them, you know, flack for what they had done and their, you know, sort of political scoundrelness. And then Matan Kahana said, were you ever in an elite unit? Did you ever pray before you went out to battle? Did you ever put on tefillin in an ambush waiting for Mechablim, yelling at the Haredim that don't serve in the army? And then someone said, with your lack of integrity and the bold-faced lying and your lack of aminut, they would say in Hebrew, just of your honesty, you would have been removed from any elite unit in the army had you pulled anything like that in the army. And that sort of meaning, that is a stain, in my opinion, on the religious Zionist upbringing. The more modern Orthodox within the Orthodox movement in Israel are represented now. Somehow we've taken...
Well, it's either a stain on the... It's actually a stain on them if you're right that he still has four or five mandates.
Well, he does.
But if it was just him...
No. I mean, the polls are out and that's the case. I mean, I know a lot of people that are sort of in Modi'in and in Efrat that are a little bit more on the modern side of Orthodox.
We have a friend here in Ibn Achal. He said, I voted for Bennett. I was sort of holding my nose, wasn't sure about it, but now I'm really happy that he did this.
So there you go. So there's a whole group of people that are...
You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway, but... The feeling that I felt was like, that is a real mirror at us saying that we have not really raised a generation that understands the value of virtue, that doesn't understand the value of just being honest and upright and true. And if you're already going into a leadership position within Israel, even though, you know, politicians are known to be liars and it's the game of lying, we should, if as like representing the religious parties, we should have been able to put out a leader that represented those values in a more profound way.
Well, can I say something that is maybe a little bit of a condemnation of you?
Okay, a little bit. Sure.
Not a big one, but a small one.
Right.
When we were talking about this, you were very angry at Bennett. And I think it was interesting. You said it was your own corruption. And I think that we all have a little bit of that in us. And I think that there was a lot of you know, courage to say that, like to identify that you have that same sort of quality, even though I don't know that you would have done that.
Look, all of these people, there's Ner Orbach, there are all these religious Zionist members of Knesset that are, they all, except for one guy, this guy Shikli, he just stood up on his principles and says, I will not lie to all of these voters that we promised.
Is
one
he
thing.
Still in the party?
No, of course not. Now he's independent. Well, he's now going to be a new leader in the right-wing camp. He's going to be like a national hero. I mean, there's like a real... I mean, all the spotlights are on him now.
Yeah, it'd be great to see him and Smotrich join. But either way, what I wanted to say was that regarding this week's Torah portion, right? Let's bring that in there because I was thinking about that as I'm reading through. And we've spoken about this in past years, but I want to talk about it again because I really cherish this concept. It's something that really resonates, is true and important to me, not only with the Jewish people, but with all of humanity. And that was the very well-debated question of why Moshe Rabbeinu did not get to enter the land of Israel. What was his terrible cataclysmic sin that the greatest, most selfless leader in all of Jewish history was not able to enter the land of Israel because of the incident where the people were thirsty. Miriam died, right? Miriam passed away, and Miriam was like Maryam. She was like the bitter waters, but she was the water. It was in her merit that Am Yisrael received water, and then she passed away. They didn't have water. And the people, of course, have the audacity and the chutzpah to start grumbling against Moshe again, which, by the way, just reminds me of Mike Foyer's analogy and example that when we were in the desert, we were just an infant nation, right? And little infants, babies have the audacity to just grumble and complain all the time. You could be doing everything for them. You make them all this food and they just take it and throw it right off their tray onto the ground, right? There's like just temper tantrums. And there's a little bit of truth to that idea that that's how we were as a nation. But they're grumbling against Moshe Rabbeinu, against Moses. And then he says, Hamorim atem, you are rebels. And I remember Rabbi Eli Yosef, he said to us, that's why he didn't get to go into the land of Israel. Because he didn't say you are being rebellious, but he said you are rebels. He confused their behavior with their essence, right? And that's something you could just never do. And I remember when this happened with Bennett, you were like, I would just make a video and call it Hashakran, the liar.
No, I said...
You would make a movie.
No, I said...
A movie about it.
No, I said the way that Donald Trump has all of those funny nicknames for Crooked Hillary, Sleepy Joe. So he had
that for Ted Cruz. He was Lion Ted.
Lion Ted. So if I was in Israeli politics and I had to refer to him, I would have just called... That would have been his nickname.
Yeah, but Lion Naftali.
Not in Hebrew, in English. Hashakran. It would be in a Hebrew thing.
Right, you would just call him out. Anyways, but that's the point. That to say he has done a lot of things for Am Yisrael, and I refuse to believe that everything was just a big show to guise his unadulterated ambition that doesn't matter to him whether he's the right or the left or the whatever. I refuse to believe that he's 100% Hashakran. He's just a simple liar, and that's it. Maybe one of his qualities is that under enough pressure, with enough upside and small enough downside, he'll lie. But does that make him a liar just because he lies? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, the news is coming out that he had already had this agreement with Yair Lapid before...
When he made that statement that was recorded?
Yeah.
Oh, my... If that's true, then that's really...
It's straight up just lying, but I guess politicians can do that. But real things are coming out now that are you know, really just disconcerting, because the question is like, why are you going into leadership in Israel because you want to lead Israel in a certain direction? Because there's a vision that you have, that there's a place you want to take the country, there's values that you believe in? Or do you just want to be in leadership because you want the power? So you'll do whatever you need to do, because right now he's theoretically the most powerful man in Israel. He's the prime minister. And his first appointment now has been Amos Yadlin, who's now going to be running sort of the security coordination of the government between America, the Palestinian Authority. And let me just read this from the newspaper. Yadlin's public positions have urged caution and patience in dealing with the nuclear program of Iran. Caution and patience dealing with Iran, in contrast to the more urgent language of Prime Minister Netanyahu. He tentatively supported the Geneva Interim Agreement in November of 2013. Yadlin advocates with peace negotiations with the Palestinians. If they fail to produce an agreement, unilaterally withdrawing from 85% of the West Bank. This is now his head of advisory of security issues, is advocating, if we can't arrive at a peace agreement, to unilaterally withdraw from Judea and Samaria, 85%. The IDF would maintain a presence in the Jordan Rift Valley and main settlement blocks, and that will, in hopes of protecting Ben Gurion Airport from Palestinian rocket attacks. And so it seems as though, like, it's to show Am Yisrael one thing, saying, I am right of Netanyahu. I'm the party that's called Yamina. Come vote for me in Am Yisrael.
And that's actually why people voted for him, because they wanted to make sure that Bibi was pressured from the right. But when they were voting for him in their minds and hearts, they're actually voting for Bibi.
Right. And not only that, they were voting for Bibi to the right. And now what they're saying is that his head of security is now saying, disengage from Judea and Samaria.
Who he hired.
It's as radical left as you get. It's not saying like, okay, let's negotiate a peace. Like, even without peace, let's just get out of Judea
and
Samaria.
The type of thinking has been so refuted and exposed
so
as fallacious
and
stupid. But another thing, just on that front, you know, under Netanyahu, who was the head? Yossi Cohen was the head of the
Mossad.
The Mossad, right? And when it came down to the Iran issue and the Biden administration, whether to, you know, now that the Biden administration wants to revive this ridiculous Iran deal, Yossi Cohen said, if we must choose, and I hope this won't happen, between our great friend the U.S. and eliminating an existential threat takes precedence. Okay? That was well said. Obviously, any normal, rational country would say that and do that. Gantz. What did Gantz say? He's now the defense minister, correct?
Right.
He said, the U.S. was and will remain Israel's most important ally in preserving its security and its security superiority in the region. The Biden administration is a true friend of Israel. Israel does not have and will not have a better partner in the U.S. Even if there are disputes, they will be solved in a direct dialogue behind closed doors and not with defiant statements that are liable to harm Israel's security. Right? So he's saying pretty much whatever the Biden administration wants to do, we're going to do. I'm definitely not going to come out and boldly and audaciously stand against the superpower of the United States and say that we're going to defend ourselves if that's what it takes. You know, it's just like a totally different posture. And when I see, you know, I sent you a link yesterday to Stephen Colbert. And, you know, Stephen Colbert, I used to really love that guy when he had his own show on Comedy Central. I thought he was just funny as anything. And then I was excited. I was like, okay, maybe that'll be the thing that I watch. His show, and I watched one or two of them, and I was so disgusted and repulsed and reviled by what he became overnight, just a leftist Democratic Party talking point, and it wasn't funny anymore. And so he had Jon Stewart on the show, and Jon Stewart was talking about how obviously the virus was created in the lab in Wuhan. I mean, people should watch it. I found it. I watched it like two, three times. I was just laughing hysterically. He's like, the name of the lab that they discovered the virus in, right, was the Wuhan Lab for Communicable Viruses, whatever it was, and that's the name of the virus. And Colbert was just like, oh, no, we can't talk about that. This is going to have to be edited out. Why are you saying all of this? Why are they saying that? Why is this massively important Democratic Party talking point that the virus was not created in a lab? Why? Because Trump said it was created in a lab. It's like anything Trump said, they need to say wrong, false, we stand against it all the way to the end of the T, as opposed to saying we didn't like him, but, well, he was right on that. They don't have the capacity to do that. And I fear that that's what's going to happen now. There was such a revulsion from all of these people in this coalition towards Bibi Netanyahu that they're going to want to take the same massive eraser to everything Benjamin Netanyahu has ever done, from the Abraham Accords to the Iranian issue to everything, and just erase it, not because it's true or good or in the best interest of Israel, but because of their personal ego hatred for him. So that's, yeah.
I just look at the Israeli political system right now, and like from the inside, it's so like human and it's so political. And, you know, I would love to look at Israel through the eyes of the Bible and the eyes of prophecy and the redemption and the Jewish return to the land of Israel. And then it becomes so human and so like worldly. And at the same time, all of this is happening on one seat. There's one seat that is the differentiating Israel. Like, it's like right wing, left wing, this new government. It's all holding on one seat. And I can't help but feel that there's a spice cart there, that this is some sort of process of refinement, some sort of clarification, the direction that Israel wants to go, who Israel is, what we're doing. And so it's just like the fact that all of this is on one guy's shoulders. Any member of Knesset at any point on the coalition can just topple the entire government. It's just so teetery. It's so such a narrow
fragile bridge.
Yeah.
That when you say that Bennett is the most powerful man in the country, I don't know that that's true. That seems like he is balancing on a deck of cards that anyone has actually more power than him. What he did to the coalition by saying, look, yeah, I have 7 seats out of 120, but I want to be prime minister because without me, Lapid, you got nothing. Anyone can now say that to him.
right,
in his coalition. And also what's an interesting thing is that I remember all the way back after Ariel Sharon had an aneurysm after he did the Gaza withdrawal, right? And then he had this aneurysm and then they had to get the next leader. And I don't remember the series of political reasoning of how it happened, but plucked out of the depths of nowhere was Ehud Olmert.
Right.
He was like the 23rd.
The reason why that was just his title. He was the Mimale Makom Rosh HaMemshala.
Okay, right. He was the guy that like switches out the prime minister
in
if something happens
right.
in such a situation. So he was, I think he was like the 23rd seat out of like 29 seats in the Likud. And he somehow got that title of switching out the prime minister if something happens to him. And then plucked out of the irrelevance of that of his position, he became the prime minister. And I remember thinking Hashem was like looking down and saying, I need someone with just the right mixture of complete lack of values and integrity and corruption, who just the right mix, this guy, 23rd seat, pluck him out, right? And just the last elections, Bennett was actually sidelined from the entire Knesset.
He was out.
He was out of the Knesset altogether. I don't know. To me, I was like, well, that's got to be the end. He's got to have lost his luster in the most embarrassing of ways, right? He pulled away from the religious Zionist party, the Beit Yehudi and Smotrich, and he started his own thing, leaving them behind in this sort of cowardly betrayal sort of way. That's at least how I perceived it.
That's how it was.
And then Smotrich got in and he didn't get in. And my heart was actually hurting for him because he's like sitting at home, lying in bed. I'm not even in the Knesset now. And I was like, well, that's pretty much it for him. And now he's the prime minister. How in the world did such a constellation of events happen that he became the prime minister? It's got to be a divine thing.
It's what it looks like.
Anyways, I'm glad we had this talk. This is good. Anything else you want to share?
Well, with all of the chaos that's sort of around us in Israel, the political system, where it's going, what's going to happen, it sort of leaves us a little bit powerless. Like, what do we do within all of that? Do you have an answer? Like, what is the call to action for just the people that are listening to this and watching sort of Israel's fate unfold? What can we do?
So, I mean, there's a series of answers to that, which is, of course, the first thing I say when I'm trying to buy time to figure out what I want to say to answer what we can do. But, you know, there's the personal, and that's to work on our inner attributes of faith and strength and building ourselves up and building our faith up and saying, what is this blemish that we see in the Israeli government and in the politicians? Do I have that anywhere in me? Let me uproot that and clean that out within myself. And so that's one of the important things, right? Be the change you want to see. I've seen that in life, that that's a very powerful tool. Whenever you're angry at someone, you wish they would be different. Look at what you wish was different about them and look within and say, do I have any of that? And that's a real opportunity there to clean ourselves up inside. That's one thing. Second thing I would say, very simple. Anyone could do it. Buy a human-sized freezer, bring it into your living room, and just tell your family you bought a full-sized coffin-looking freezer because you want to plunge in it every day. What do you think?
No, I'm still struggling with it. I think that's really a good idea, that the things that are really bothering me about the political system, those must be in me. That's why it's bothering me so much.
Another thing I think would be to join the fellowship. Right? The fellowship has been like a saving grace for me in my life. It's really helped pull out from within me what my voice is, what my message is, what I really have to say. This last fellowship, I think, was a very powerful one. Your last one before that was really powerful. Every time I do it, I'm like, what are the chances we'll be blessed to be able to do something like that again? And I've been saying that for almost a year now. And it's just been really excellent in the relationships and the bonds that are forming, not only between us, but between the people in the fellowship. That's been a really special thing and a way to support us and what we're doing.
A member from the fellowship just WhatsApped me just, I don't know, what was maybe like 2 weeks ago. And it was kind of interesting just hearing it from his perspective. He's from Colorado. He's like, do you guys realize that what you've created doesn't exist in the world? There's nothing like this anywhere else in the world, that so many people from so many backgrounds in so many countries, there's 40 countries that are represented in the fellowship, all come together to talk about the higher things in life, that come together to learn Torah, that come together to just grow together, to become better people together, to serve God together. And all of you are so different and so like diverse. There's just nothing like that in Israel, that's rooted in Israel, that's broadcasting to the world, but there's nothing like it anywhere else in the world. It's really, really a special thing to be a part of.
So we invite all of you to be a part of it. If you want to join, you could go to fellowship. At thelandofisrael.com, you can send...
thelandofisrael.com/fellowship.
Right, that's true. I think there's also an email, fellowship at thelandofisrael.
Oh, you're saying the email, yes.
You can send an email to fellowship. You can send an email to me and Jeremy at any point just to talk with us, anything. Ari@thelandofisrael.com, jeremy@thelandofisrael.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we want to bless all of you to stay strong and stay safe, stay connected to Israel, and be in touch. Hashem should bless all of you with everything good. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom. My name is Jeremy Gimpel. A few months ago, we started an online seminar teaching life-changing biblical wisdom revealed from the original Hebrew and straight from the mountains of Judea. With global instability on the rise, more and more people are turning to God, realizing now they don't exactly know where to look for guidance. The Bible says the guidance will come from the land of Israel. What started as an online seminar has grown into a global fellowship with hundreds of members from over 30 countries. We are participating in fulfilling prophecy as we learn the Bible through the eyes of prophecy, with a focus on what it's telling about us in our lives today. What you will discover is that the wisdom transmitted thousands of years ago is speaking directly to us in our time right now. Instead of learning the Bible as a religion, it's the Torah of Israel, the living guidance of God. So please join us for our next online gathering and get access to the full library of teachings that the Land of Israel Fellowship is offering. Join now and get an audio series on the prophecy encoded in the book of Joshua, absolutely for free. Just click on the link below or email fellowship@thelandofisrael.com. I don't know how you found this video or what compelled you to click on that link, but I don't believe in coincidence, and I would encourage you to take the next step on your journey toward the Land of Israel. I hope to see you at the Land of Israel Fellowship. Shalom.